Mark Reed, welcome to the Art of the Punt. How are you today?
I'm very well.
Yeah, you've travelled up the freeway to come and talk to us, so we appreciate that.
Come down from the Yarra Valley, heaven's own earth.
Would you much rather be there? Is that where you're much happier there than coming to the Big Smoke?
Oh no, I'm a Big Smoke person. A Fitzroy boy, really. Yeah. I came from Fitzroy, inner suburb of Melbourne here, and we made the best bookmakers. Fitzroy boys in Melbourne made the best bookmakers.
Very good. So we're going to talk about a lot of those, that kind of ideas and stuff in this podcast and other podcasts we're going to do with you. But primarily this one is an education series. We're trying to arm people with the tools and the ideals and the fundamentals to improve their punting and punt better and try and win on the punt. You've had a very long and distinguished career on the punt. Many call you the godfather of punting and bookmaking in Australia. So I asked you to sort of boil down what's helped you over the years on the punt. You managed to get it down to 11 fundamentals. And we're going to unpack each of them in this episode. Before we do that, and it might be a big challenge for you, but do you reckon you could tell us about your background in the great game in about 1 minute?
Yeah, quickly. I grew up in Fitzroy in a house running SP bookmaking.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was then married a second time later, and she married a great judge of horses, the Doyen of Trackmen of Flemington, Lowell Reed. I learned from him, and basically I was always going to be a bookmaker.
Yeah.
I went to Melbourne University doing science, but I was always going to be a bookmaker, and I started bookmaking as soon as I turned 21.
Yes, and would you consider yourself a bookmaker more or a punter more, or is it an equal distribution of the two?
I've always been a punting bookmaker.
Yeah.
There were other punting bookmakers.
Yes.
In Melbourne, Jim Nielsen was a very big punter bookmaker. But normally bookmakers only stuck to their vocation, if you like. Bill Waterhouse once said to me when I arrived in Sydney, "You know that you can't win at the punt." Well, I said to Bill, "Maybe in your day you couldn't with the sort of tactics you use, but I think that basically punters can win today with good technology."
All right, why don't we try and get into these 11 fundamentals? So your first one is to choose your racing team. Can you elaborate on what you mean by that?
Yeah, one of the things I was taught early days from my mother, who was a big punter, was that you always be judged by the company you keep. So meaning the corollary of that is keep yourself in the best company.
Mm-hmm.
So when you adopt a plan of attack on the racetrack, you want to choose your own racing team. Mm-hmm. And that the team could be the people you associate with on the racetrack, but also you've got to think about picking stables, jockeys, and the stable jockey combinations you want to follow. Mm-hmm. So one has got to do a fair bit of work, but even though up in Hong Kong, where I do all my betting these days and have for the last 10 years, there's 25% of the trainers and jockeys who, if I've got them rated on top, I just don't bid on the race.
Okay.
So they are not in my team.
Yes.
So I suggest that, punters go and look at the strike rates and the consistency of their stables and their jockeys, and say, I'm only going to bet on these guys.
And do you have an example in the Australian marketplace that people should have on their team? Can you think of, in a broad sense?
Well, I think the one I'm very attracted to at present is Adrian Bott and Gay Waterhouse team.
Okay.
Their strike rate, I've noticed over the last couple of years, exceeds all the other major trainers.
Yes.
I like the way that blend of experience and know-how. You've got to love Gay. She's an innovator. She's bred in the purple. She's the first lady of Australian racing. So basically, you've got also the new ideas coming from Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian's got a degree in some kind of computer discipline.
Mm-hmm.
He can then bring those tools and put them, those tools are very relevant in today's training methods.
Mm-hmm.
So they can measure all the things you can measure on the internet, like with the technology available, like we do ourselves.
Mm.
They can really understand things like, the heart rate of the horses. They know exactly how much exercise to give the horses.
Mm.
They've got parameters to work through, whereas before it used to be guesswork.
Yeah, very good. All right, let's keep moving. We're going to go to number two, which is consistency and potential energy. This one confuses me a bit. I'm interested to hear you unpack it.
Well, consistency is really another word for class.
Okay.
So if you meet people or you meet horses and they're consistent, they're classy people, classy horses. One of the signs of an erratic person or erratic horse lacks class.
Yeah.
Consistency also tells you that there must be room for improvement. You can't be consistent in life or any exercise, whether an athlete or a horse or an equine athlete, unless you can't be running the same rating race on race on race.
Yep.
When you've got all the chances of taking it, when all the chances are there for you to run well, you just don't do that consistency unless you're pulling on some reserve from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And is that where you move into the potential energy?
That's when you know exactly when you've got potential energy must be there,
mm-hmm.
and therefore you can identify that horse has done that rating 5 times out of his last 12 starts. That's a base from which to jump off. There's something in that horse that's getting that consistency, and you say, I'm going to give this horse the next level.
Okay. And so the more consistent they are, the more chance they have potential energy reserves.
Exactly. That's the only way they can be consistent.
So let's move to the class figure for the race.
Class figure for race is identified by the way the race program is set up. In the old days, went from maiden to class 1, class 2, class 3, class 4, class 5, class 6.
We have the benchmark system now.
Then you got the benchmark, the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
But then you went to open class, then you went to the group races. Now, this is very important. I remember in 1987, I took our database and I looked and I said, I want a full dump and I want to do the whole of Australia and I want to get the average rating for every class. And what came out of that just amazed me. What I was thinking was happening was proven, that horses have a level of performance. They don't improve in an irregular fashion.
So let's go to race map and race speed, and that seems like it forms a big part of the way people do form these days. Has it always been like that? But even back in the 60s and 70s when you started betting, was race map and race speed a big part of form assessment?
It always has been,
yeah.
Because horses can only do their rating where, you know, if they're a back marker or they've got brilliant acceleration or they've got their one pace. Most horses are one paced.
Mm-hmm.
Those sort of horses have to be at the front. So the race speed of the race, trying to interpret the race speed, is absolutely the first critical level, first step in the process of doing the form.
Excellent. All right, we'll move on to number 5. So choose performance ratings for tomorrow's event. This one confuses me as well.
Ratings are, according to the Don Scott method, for instance, are weight ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, weight is a relevant area of the exercise, but speed is much more important than weight.
Mm.
And it's all because of the formula. When you're understanding physics and the performance of a horse or any kind of natural event where it's all about the energy and you have to therefore establish what the elements are in coming up with a race outcome. So the elements are basically the horse is got to carry a different relative weight to its competitors, if it's a handicap, of course. And then it's a matter of how much faster that horse is to tell you what its energy rating is going to be for that race. Mm-hmm. Now, the total energy rating is kinetic energy, which is energy by velocity, by running, by the speed. And then you've got another energy factor called potential energy again. So potential energy is something which is the hardest part to read. So easy to do the kinetic energy because we've got the sectional times, we've got the time of the race, we've all got standards for everything, and we can work out a formula. Now, you know, simple physics. You can apply Einstein's equations to horse racing. I do. When I started, I was applying Newton's, you know, when you're doing physics in school back in my day, we did Newtonian physics, very simple physics. The force energy equals mass by acceleration. So acceleration is change in velocity over time. So you measure between two sections, and therefore you can establish the horse's acceleration. Then you can compare every horse's acceleration. Then you can do the equation. That's what I do.
And this has formed a big part of the way you've done form the whole
way
through.
That's what I do. Yep. I revolutionise the way you do this thing. It was interesting in that time, and this is a lesson. At that time we're talking about when I arrived in the city in 1980, there was no ratings in Melbourne except for Bob Robertson, who owned Desirable, Out of Danger, or the Without Fear two-year-olds. And he was a very successful punter from South Australia, and he was doing ratings, the first guy ever been in Melbourne to rate. And he was, actually, Bob got me on Desirable in the Newmarket. I thought that she couldn't win a three-year-old filly in the Newmarket, and I bet him 100,000 to 10,000, which was a huge bet in the day. And he got me, and I was wrong. His ratings proved, and my old-fashioned methods weren't good enough. So having understood, I saw all these guys were betting on the Don Scott method. There's a whole group of different groups all following the same dogma, and they all did their pricing, and they all bet to prices. Don't bet the prices. The normal punter, unless you're an expert analyst in doing prices, which I can count on in the whole of Australia, there might be four of them.
So why don't I stop you there? And the next number six is price the race. So why don't you keep talking about how you price the race, considering that you just said that punters shouldn't really bother to try and price the race.
You can price the race, but not for the purpose of price the race by all means. But don't price it for the purpose of using your prices as a barometer when you should bet. Mm-hmm. Right? Use your prices for your stake's going to be.
Yes.
Okay?
Okay.
That's my advice.
Right.
People can argue with that, but they can't. But I'm telling you about prices. You can be very set on your prices, 2-1, but then all of a sudden, the 2-1 chance is now 3-1, now 4-1. You say, oh, now it's a double overlay, now it's a triple overlay. How good is this?
Yes.
Well, I'm saying to you, the market's not stupid.
Yes.
Especially when I came in Sydney, when I was up in Sydney. If that sort of thing happened, you might as well tear up your ticket.
Mm. And does that relate anyway to number seven, which is reviews? Is that a segue into that?
Well, reviews are always so important. You know, you have to review what you have done in terms of, if this is a process of doing the form, that you've got to then get, I say, you've done your prices, you're ready to go, but you're not ready to go because you could have made a mistake there. You could have overlooked something. Mm. So to do that, once again, make corrections by exception, find someone else independent to you that has done their set of prices and compare the two. You don't have to compare the ones you're out on. And if you're happy with what you think it is on that review, use your price. Then you might find, oh, I missed that, now I can change the price. That's the first review. The second review is the market.
Yes.
You must look at the market.
Number eight is cast out unqualified races.
Yes. Well, there are races which you don't want to bet in, and I cannot, everyone's time, you can't bet in every race. If I've got a customer, as a bookmaker, who wants to bet in every race, I don't have to even bother about putting him in any kind of special basket. Just put him in the basket down there, we don't even bother looking at.
Yeah, right, well, that takes us well into our next point or fundamental, which is choose a consistent betting strategy, and that obviously applies to bookmaking and punting.
Yeah, so you've got to be consistent, and basically a strategy has got to be well researched. Mm-hmm. So basically you've got to test the strategy first.
And that could be back testing, right?
You've got to back test.
Yeah, but which is very data driven and quite sophisticated, but a lot of people do it. Like Kingsley, who I've had a lot to do with, he's all about back testing and
anyone
stuff.
Anyone who doesn't keep the score, doesn't do their testing, and doesn't keep the score, they're not serious.
Yeah.
I heard on a podcast just last week in preparing for this, I looked at what has been out there by young, new analysts, and there's a guy on there who says, no, I don't ever keep the score.
Yeah.
I just hope I'm going to be able to pay the bills.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be a tipper.
Yeah.
No, you can't do it that way. You're going to do this thing, you've got to do it very seriously.
Yes.
And it's going to take a lot of your time.
Yes.
There's no one I know in racing that has been successful without doing a hell of a lot of work. They can be successful in the short term, but over the long term, they don't last.
Yeah, yeah.
But
All right, well, let's move to number 10, which is relevant to what you just said. So adopt a consistent staking formula for each strategy.
Yes.
And can you maybe put it in terms that's relevant to the people who are watching? You know, generally people who are watching are probably betting 20s and $50 and stuff. So, yeah, what can they do? Because staking is such an important part, especially if you want
to play a lot. It doesn't make any difference the level you're betting. $20 could be $20,000. It's only got just cross off the last three zeros.
Mm.
It's all got to be the same method, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, some of the smartest punters on my surveys were only $20 punters. They had the highest margin of profit.
Mm.
Mostly the guys who bet the biggest had the smallest margins of profit. Yeah.
All right, so the final one is scoreboard. So don't quite understand that one, but what does that mean?
Well, it's like you said, you keep the score. You've got to keep the score, but you've got to keep the score and drill right down. Where is your sweet spot? What are you good at? What are you good at on wet tracks? Are you only good on dry tracks? Look at the horses you back. Do you back only win on the horse you back that lead, or are you also successful on back markers? You look at your tracks. Oh, you know, I had about 3 years in a row, I just couldn't seem to win at Happy Valley. Mm-hmm. And at Happy Valley, I'd be losing 5% on turnover, which is, I said, like, hey, how is this be? But I'd be winning 25% at Sha Tin.
Mm.
How can it be?
Mm.
You know? Well, there's a lot of track bias.
Mm-hmm.
So track bias can stuff everything up. All your maps are ruined. The jockeys start to ride differently, all these sort of things. So when we talk about before about rule out your races, the last point, that's what you have to do. Once you get a track bias, you got to rule out the races. The second thing you have to do is when you've chosen the rating for your race. I don't think we got far on this one, but the way to choose the class of the race is generally the average rating of that class. And that will be given to you if you look at Greg Carpenter, who's now left Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
He was the best handicapper, recognised around the world as being the best handicapper in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So Greg Carpenter should have, his model of handicapping should be universal around the whole of Australia. Make all our life, all your life, I don't bet on Australia, but make all your life easy.
Mm.
Make it much simpler. Everyone would know what they're doing. Now they've got classes. I look at the classes in Australia. I start to do a bit of rating on my database of the people who maintain my Australian database. And I'm just checking out if they're doing the right things. And I'm saying, I just don't get these classes. Where are they coming from?
Mm.
There's so many of them.
Mm.
So basically, yeah. And the other thing you should do, this is a tip for your punters. You might not understand how to work out that class figure. You should, but on the Racing Victoria site they have a grid showing and some explanation. I think it should be explained better. Mm. And they could explain it better. But the other way is the way I do it, is I do a historical look at the last 3 years, what that race rated.
Mm-hmm.
Every season, the same races are run the same time of year every year.
Mm.
So I take a weighted average of the last 3 years, and I see what that race rated on the weighted average, and that becomes my standard.
Okay.
That's the best way of doing it.
Yeah, okay. That's a nice little pill. And so to finish off, so to be at your level, you've already said that you have to work incredibly hard. So we're in a bit of a break at Hong Kong at the moment, but early September it cranks up there again. So the first meeting will be on a Sunday. And can you just let us know what's involved for you, how long it takes you to do the form? Let's say it's a 10 race card. When do you start and how many hours will you put into it to get to your final product
when you're
ready to bet?
I will pick out, I've got a sweet spot in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Class 4.
Okay.
Class 4 is the entry level in Hong Kong. That's my sweet spot.
Yeah.
I am the self-confessed expert of Class 4. And what am I playing against in Hong Kong? I'm playing against all the quants,
yep.
All the new breed, all your young new breed, right? Yep. Haven't got a clue, these young breed, about physiology. Haven't got a clue about mental issues that horses have.
Okay.
That's not in the stuff they've read or what they've actually programmed into their model, right? Don't know about things like horses. When people go to the sales, you'll watch them when they're looking at a horse parade up and down. They're looking at the curves in their legs if they're offset. Whatever else, you know why they're doing that? Because that reflects that if they are offset, that more than likely will come out when they start to gallop.
Mm.
So you'll see horses galloping. If you get into it like I do, you'll see horses dish. You know, they come around the turns, they're dishing because their leg is not conformed properly. So they'll dish a leg and they start circular rather than what you've got to look at. If you want to see how a horse should gallop, get the silver horse at the front down the Seine River at the French Olympics. Right?
Nice get galloping
that,
action.
Get that picture of that, get that film, watch that film, because they, I've got no doubt, they have used AI to work out what is the best action for a horse.
Right.
I looked at that thing on the running across the water.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe what I saw. And I rang up my staff and I said to them, get on this and what else? I've been telling you how they should gallop, how their knees should lift and how they should, the back motion as well. I said, there it is.
Yeah, so just quickly back though, so you're finishing the form off for Hong Kong. You start
hours,
the day before.
I haven't answered your question. The hours I spend, I'm now, you know, in my, Shari hates me telling my age, but I'm 74, but I'm in my 75th year.
Yes.
But I'm better now than I've ever been.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, I believe.
I've got my figures here to prove it. But I'm better. Why I'm better is because I keep reinventing and I'm in collaboration with an American group who are academic group who are specialists in AI. I'm only better because my initial product is very good, but they have used the AI to determine strategies around those and to find sweet spots in the market where I can exploit. And they've been able to increase my margin by 50%.
It's huge.
Massive.
Yeah.
Massive. I can't wait for this season to start. But basically, I only may do 6 races a day.
Yep.
And that'll take me, I will spend, even though all the form's done and everything's done, I will still spend a minimum of 2.5 hours per race.
Wow, that's a lot.
And, you know, because I'm competing in the A grade here, that's what's good.
Yeah.
In Hong Kong, the players up there are the A grade around the world.
Yeah.
Right? So to me, I'm still enjoying life and I'm still challenged. And basically because if I can beat the best still,
yes.
Well, there's hope for all us old guys.
So would you say you're enjoying punting as much or more than you ever have?
Well, when I'm winning, I am. But I'm winning.
Fair enough. All right. Well, thank you for your passion for the great game and also for punters. A lot of insight there. So thank you very much. And I hope we do it again.
Chances are you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.